Good evening, everyone. So welcome to the third night of a Four Wednesdays series. And we are, during this four-class series, we are dealing with shamatha and vipassana. And so two very familiar themes for you. And we are dealing with it in relation to two other very familiar themes for you, for most of you, stillness and movement. So the very first of the sessions that we did was shamatha and looking at the mind in stillness. So, and the little different slant in this four-class series of what I have presented in the past before is that this is borrowing a few techniques mostly. From Mahamudra, and especially from the particular text of the ninth Karmapa, Wangchuk Dorje, and especially his text pointing out the Dharmakaya. And so the first class was looking at the mind in stillness, and basically with the idea that this is what we are doing is in that particular, what we are doing with that, the goal of that particular class and of practice in that vein is to develop shamatha, so the stillness of shamatha. And then the second class was a vipassana class, and it was looking at the nature of the mind in stillness and then asking several questions. There are seven questions in the text that the teacher would ask and then send you back to your cave, and then you would answer those questions in your own practice, come back and report to your teacher, and then on the basis of that, he would then go through another stage with you called pointing out the mind in stillness. And so he would then, so you would look at the mind in stillness, he would ask a few questions about your experience, and then he would help you to fathom your experience or to elucidate your experience by pointing out the implications, basically, of the answers to your questions or what you have observed. And so with this third class, then, we are going to go back to shamatha, but now it is going to be stillness and motion. So the shamatha practice of stillness and motion, or in what, as Trangu Rinpoche's translator, and it seems like in that particular lineage, you see this term, rather than movement, occurrence. So stillness versus occurrence. And so what we're going to be doing is, again tonight, basically trying to develop this simultaneous stillness and movement as a shamatha practice, but again with a few different slants and angles and perspectives drawn from the Mahamudra tradition of Wangchuk Dorje. And I should have mentioned this to you last Wednesday night, but there was an extraordinary opportunity last weekend that I was able to take advantage of. A webcast of Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche teaching, pointing out the Dharmakaya in a weekend retreat in San Antonio. And so marvelous teacher, really highly regarded, and I learned a great deal, actually, and a few of those points are going to make it into the class tonight. And so when we are looking directly at the nature of the mind, what we are finding in the point of this progression really is to, first of all, we look at the nature of the mind, we settle in the stillness of the present moment, and then we ask questions about it to fathom the nature. So first of all, we find the experience of stillness. So let's just call it shamatha. But it is just the stillness, meaning that it is a non-conceptual state. And there is no thought, no movement. And then we look at the nature of the mind, and what we are hoping to realize with the, that's not a good way of putting it, hoping to realize, What we the teachers say is there to be available, or is there available for us to recognize, is the nature of this mind in stillness. And that is an experience of uncontrived freshness, of luminosity, and essentially the twin non-dual package of luminosity and emptiness, or as is termed in these Mahamudra texts, insubstantiality. So insubstantiality and luminosity is what we discover when we really fathom the nature of the mind in stillness. And then we move on to movement in this next phase. And movement is, and going on to movement or occurrence is really important, because when we practice shamatha and develop this stillness of resting in non-conceptual absence of thought, this is a very pleasant, peaceful, serene, tranquil experience, and it can become very alluring, and there can be a temptation to just continue to rest in that and become attached to that experience of peace, serenity. Absence of thought means absence of mental afflictions. So maybe this is, you know, this is the real oasis of tranquility. And the masters of both Mahamudra and Dzogchen point out, if you become attached to that and you cultivate that to the exclusion of other practices, and there's even a bodhisattva vow about this, of basically craving the peace of serenity, of tranquility, of shamatha, you basically are just creating the karma to take rebirth in either the form or the formless realm, depending on which form of the meditation that you're become attached to. So it's not, so we move on from the shamatha, stability and vividness and peace and tranquility. And as Dujam Lingpa, as I cited last week, if that's all that you recognize in this life is phase one, basically achieving shamatha, which seems like such a lofty goal to us, maybe even unattainable, that if I were only able to do that, then all of my dharma problems, the rest of my dharma career is set. And in some way that's true. But if that's all that we achieve, then Dujam Lingpa points out that we haven't advanced one hair's breadth towards liberation. So we need to bring in the vipassana in order to do that, to cut through the attachment, to cut through the dualism that remains, even very subtle dualism and subtle conceptuality that remains with even the achievement of shamatha, to cut through then to pristine awareness, which is another intermediate goal, still not the end of the process, but another very lofty intermediate goal. And so we transcend the attachment to the stability and vividness and the serenity and tranquility of shamatha by actually recognizing its nature. And then we apply that same wisdom that we achieve or that we realize in applying or recognizing the nature of the mind in stillness. We apply that then next week. We're actually going to do the application. But what we will recognize then next week is that the nature of the mind in movement and actually the thoughts and the appearances that are actually the motion have the same nature of the mind in stillness. And when you recognize that, then there is absolutely no reason not to jump into the pool with all of the movement of the mind and think that somehow your practice is only capable of dealing with stillness rather than the chaos of the movement of the mind. And so it, just one interesting observation right away that jumps out at you when you begin studying the Mahamudra texts after immersing yourself in Dzogchen is that when we get to studying movement of the mind, this actually is part of the Vipassana section of the text. So the Shamatha section is all about developing the stillness and using a number of different techniques, or what Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche called focal supports. And there are a number of different focal supports. The one that we experimented with in the very first class was the visual. And just looking at a coarse object, just whatever is right in front of you in your visual field, and then narrowing that down to selecting a more subtle object that is in your visual field. But finding the very relaxed mind with which to engage that in a non-conceptual way. So that is basically the extent of the shamatha practice in this presentation of Mahamudra, is the number of different focal supports, or shamatha also without a support. But then when we get to taking the movement of the mind, that is presented in the Vipassana section. And it's very interesting, the way that that's done. We'll bring in some of that Vipassana element of how you deal with the mind in movement from the Vipassana practice, but bring it into our shamatha practice tonight. And I hope that will be beneficial. It certainly has been for me when I use it that way in my practice. But for Dujam Lingpa, in his Dzogchen text, this dealing with the mind in motion and the movements of the mind is part of shamatha practice. So in your handout, here you have a citation from The Enlightened View of Samantabhadra. And here, Samantabhadra is giving these instructions. Samantabhadra himself is giving teaching that is this particular text to an apparitional group of disciples that Dujam Lingpa is part of, and he acts as the scribe and writes down this text. So Samantabhadra says, there are two kinds of paths. Individuals with supreme faculties proceed within themselves by way of direct crossing over, and individuals with middling or inferior faculties proceed gradually, in dependence on the grounds and paths. So if you're one of these people of supreme faculties or superior faculties, basically all you do is, because you have very little dust in your eyes, you have so much karmic momentum because of previous practice in previous lifetimes, that basically you just hear the instruction and then you realize it. And then for those of middling faculties or inferior faculties, which is certainly I fall into the lower group of that, then you have basically the entire text is for people of middling and inferior faculties, because this becomes, you may take a gradual approach of all of the stages of, first of all, developing shamatha and then cutting through, rather than going right into direct crossing over practices like the superior faculties. So he says, basically, if you're curious about which group you belong to, you do a placement exam. And so this placement exam lasts 20 days. And what you do is you investigate, first of all, merge your mind with empty external space and remain in meditative equipoise for 20 days. So you remain in samadhi for 20 days. And by so doing, individuals of the supreme faculties will perceive the originally pure, essential nature of the primordial ground with the eye of wisdom. And they will identify this within themselves. So, and as he mentioned earlier, this is, you do that by way of direct crossing over. So this is a stage even beyond what you do after you become really well settled in pristine awareness, that you arrive at through cutting through, and then you spend some time there could be 8 to 12 years, something like that. And then you reach this other stage, basically, of fully enlightened Buddhahood with the direct crossing over. But here's the part that is pertinent for us, or for me anyway, and probably for some of you, most of you maybe. Individuals of the latter two types, when you try to do this, you go out to a place with a broad view, and for 20 days you say, I am just going to rest in meditative equipoise. When you do that, you will be tormented by confusion and distress. And since their minds do not seem to merge with space, they will pass the time in fabrications and striving. Could be an ordinary 24-minute gataka is describing there also. While becoming caught up in many thoughts. Here is the way for people of that type to enter upon the grounds and paths. They should practice identifying consciousness as stillness and recognizing thoughts as movement. Like people watching a show of optical illusions, or you could say television. Through meditating diligently with keen enthusiasm, all the subtle and coarse assemblies of thoughts will be calmed in the ocean of the primordial ground, and they will abide in a state of unwavering stillness, and there will arise the experience of shamatha. At this time, and here's the classic description of the experience of shamatha, at this time there will arise bliss like the warmth of a fire, luminosity like the breaking of dawn, and non-conceptuality like an ocean unmoved by waves. And so I can't do any better in describing Dujam Lingpa's approach to shamatha, and especially dealing with stillness and motion, because this is really a unique approach to developing shamatha in that Dujam Lingpa offers to us. I can't do better than to just cite a few more different texts. And so this from, he really begins to elucidate this. Now, he says, begin to recognize the stillness or consciousness as stillness. So this is going to become really important as we proceed through the evening and get into some Mahamudra slants on this. So consciousness is stillness, and think of thought as movement, okay? So basically, we've got that. And then you, simply by doing that, then, and recognize working with the stillness and movement, you will achieve shamatha. And here is a little more elucidation then from the text Sharp Vajra of Conscious Awareness Tantra, Dujam Lingpa's text. According to the teachings, he writes, there are four types of mindfulness of the essential nature of the path. The first entails distinguishing between stillness and movement, and by the power of familiarizing yourself with their different appearances, there is single-pointed mindfulness of the unification of the two. So of the four types of mindfulness, single-pointed mindfulness is the first in this approach of Dujam Lingpa. And the way that you reach this single-pointedness is that you first of all know the difference between stillness of consciousness and movement of appearances. And then you begin to have a unified experience of this stillness and movement. And this is really, this is about as much as he says about this in any of the texts so far that I have studied. So far, four of the five texts. And we'll see if in Vajra Essence, the one that comes next spring, the first installment of 3 years of that, whether there's going to be any more. But I think we've already got as much as he has to say about that. Basically, there are in the way that this appears to me is that in this approach to shamatha, there are really only two basic skills to learn. It's really, really simple. He doesn't start with breath meditation. He doesn't start with any focal supports or sticks or stones or anything like that. He says basically you go right to the mind and you first of all, and you go directly to working with stillness and movement. And so you begin by recognizing the difference between stillness and movement. So one way that I hope that we supported that in this presentation of this four-class series is that you really got the feeling of stillness, what that is like, the stillness of the mind, with the basic instruction of the first class. You know, it was basically, you first of all can work with something in a visual field, get the experience of non-conceptuality, because when you're narrowing your experience to only perceptual experience, that is an experience of non-conceptuality. So you can become familiar with non-conceptuality in that very, very simple way, and then you can take that experience with you to the other end of what we did on that particular class, which was awareness of awareness. So awareness with no appearances. The only thing that awareness knows is luminosity and spaciousness, or luminosity and emptiness. So basically, what it seems to me is that there are, Dujom Lingpa is saying, there are only two things, only two skill sets, you could say, to learn in this approach to shamatha. First of all, recognize the difference between stillness and movement, the stillness of consciousness and the movement of mental appearances. And then you have a unified experience of the two. And this is, I think, for everybody who has, or many people who have tried it, this is where it gets interesting. How do you have a unified experience of it? And this is what we're going to spend our evening on tonight, a few ways that may help in having that unified experience. So you actually achieve single-pointedness. So in the nine stages of shamatha, this one mode of mindfulness would take you all the way through level 8 of shamatha, where you actually achieve single-pointedness. And then in the second mode of mindfulness, then he says, then even while resting without strenuously observing them like before, so implying that there is effort involved and that you are, there's some strenuously observing these mental appearances from the point of stillness. So this might sound familiar to you, a little bit of effort involved watching the movement of appearances while you're trying to maintain the stillness. At some point then, you have this unified experience of stillness and motion, and then you reach the point where that becomes effortless. So this then becomes what the second form of mindfulness that Dujom Lingpa describes on the progression for developing shamatha is this manifest mindfulness. Basically, it's still the same two skills. It's only recognizing the difference between stillness and motion, then having a unified experience of it, but now there's nothing more to learn. It's just that it becomes effortless. So at this point then, abiding, so what happens after basically you reach this point where the unified experience of stillness and motion becomes effortless? He says, then abiding loosely without mindfulness in a vacuous, wide open clarity, a spacious vacuity, constitutes lying down on a bed that is devoid of mindfulness. So this is absence of mindfulness, the third mode of mindfulness. So this is lying down on a bed that is devoid of mindfulness, which is substrate. So for those of you who have been following the Dzogchen teachings over the years, you know that this is what Alan Wallace would call the relative ground of phenomena. So this is the ground from which all appearances of samsara arise. And this is the start. Its basic quality is unawareness. This is the state that you fall into 6 hours a day at least in deep dreamless sleep. So it is the state of just unawareness. You might as well have a general anesthetic or be knocked unconscious. The pilot light is still going, but there is an absence of awareness. there. But here, so without going into a whole evening on these distinctions, this here, the big distinction between this and as a movement and getting very close now to shamatha, the actual achievement of shamatha, what's the difference between this experience and deep dreamless sleep that you fall into every night? It is in deep dreamless sleep you are unaware, and here now you could say that you are lucid. You have entered substrate lucidly, so this is would be exactly like then being lucid in deep dreamless sleep, meaning that you are aware. You no longer pass out. You no longer enter a black near attainment experience, but you are aware of the vacuity. So he says a wide open clarity, a spacious vacuity. And then once coarse mindfulness, and then once this coarse mindfulness has subsided, resting in a luminous vacuity is called self-illuminating mindfulness, or the substrate consciousness. So basically you go through this progression of, and again, there's still, you don't have to learn anything new or apply any new techniques in these third and fourth modes. They're just experiences that arise to you. So it's so interesting to me that the only things to really learn in this approach to shamatha are recognizing the difference between stillness and motion, and then having this unified and then eventually effortless experience of stillness and motion. So that is the key, and you can practice this for a long time and, you know, have different experiences about what this subtle, what is this union of movement and stillness? What is this like? And it can be beguiling, it can be frustrating, it can be, you can wonder whether you're doing this at all or whether this is just ordinary, rampant, ruminating mind let loose. It's a, you know, there's a reason that this technique, this simple technique, will take you all the way to single-pointedness. And then, so this is really important distinctions now. He says the first two kinds of mindfulness, so where single-pointed mindfulness and manifest mindfulness, directly perceive whatever creative displays arise. So you're working with appearances here. Right from the very beginning of your shamatha practice, when you're working with stillness and movement, you aren't trying to eliminate appearances. You're working with the stillness of awareness, illuminating mental appearances as they arise. And he says you're directly perceiving whatever creative displays that arise. And then while during the latter two, the absence of mindfulness and self-illuminating mindfulness, apart from abiding solely in dependence upon a subtle mode of apprehension, all radiant appearances and creative displays of thoughts cease. So there is only non-conceptuality. So now you are resting in this warmth, like bliss like the warmth of a fire, you know, the ocean unmoved by waves, the non-conceptuality, and the luminosity of the sun. So bliss, luminosity, and non-conceptuality, all that you're experiencing here. So one more of my favorite explications now of how we go about approaching this, again, some more hints about how we can approach this practice that is just there's not much description about it. It just tells you what to do and then basically leaves you to explore it. So we have to bring in some other sources here. And this is from a Mahamudra text from the Mahasiddha Maitripa. And This is one that I keep going back to over and over and over again, probably every course series that I've taught and every retreat that I've taught. You've heard about the essential instructions of the Mahasiddha Maitripa, right? Mahasiddha Maitripa was one of the 84 Mahasiddhas of ancient India who achieved enlightenment in this lifetime with the practices of Mahamudra. So he says that, first of all, there are three types of shamatha. Shamatha that, first of all, depends on signs. So that would be what shamatha, you know, breath meditation on down to stick and a stone and anything that depends on an external object that you are focusing your attention to develop selective, exclusive, focused attention on a particular sign, on a particular object. So that's one type of shamatha practice. And that can be a pure object or an impure object, like the breath. You know, basically anything impure means that it's just mundane. It doesn't mean that it's bad, but it just means that it's not a sacred image. Or sacred images are also signs. You can have an image of the Shakyamuni Buddha or Padmasambhava Samantabhadra, whatever, you know, that you're looking at as your focal support. And then there is the third one, quiescence that is settled in non-conceptualization. That is what we did at the end of the first class, awareness of awareness. But the one that we are going to work with now for the next two sessions is the second one, quiescence or shamatha focused on conceptualization. And this is his pith instructions then, for how you actually go about practicing this shamatha focused on conceptualization. He says, whatever virtuous and non-virtuous thoughts arise, steadily and non-conceptually observe their nature. This is interesting, isn't it? He's talking about shamatha practice, so this really jumps out at me, you know, but this is a Mahamudra text that this is extracted from. But he says, whatever appearances arise, you know, virtuous, non-virtuous, it doesn't matter. Whatever arises, steadily and non-conceptually, okay, shamatha, steadily and non-conceptually, observe not their appearance, but their nature. This is interesting. So you're observing their nature, which is vipassana, right? So you're right here, he's telling you that, and this is so Mahamudra, that you really bring in vipassana practice right into your shamatha practice to support your shamatha practice in very, very important ways. And so, by what important way? By so doing, these virtuous and non-virtuous thoughts are calmed in non-grasping. So if you're seeing the nature of these appearances as they arise, the appearances themselves, whether they're virtuous, non-virtuous, really powerful emotional experiences, whatever, they are calmed in non-grasping. So you are not grasping onto them, so the mind will remain still if you don't grasp on to one of these moving appearances. How do you prevent grasping onto these powerful perhaps emotional appearances that arise? You see their nature in the moment they arise. So, so as these awareness vividly arises, clear and empty, with no object of grasping, by so doing, they are calmed in non-grasping, and awareness vividly arises, clear and empty. So the appearances are, because they are calmed and non-grasping, awareness is not grasping to these appearances, and it vividly arises clear and empty. So these two qualities of awareness that are just mentioned over and over and over and over again, and this is what we are intending to experience when we are resting in the present moment of awareness. What are we going to be experiencing? The luminosity and emptiness, or the clarity and emptiness, or the clarity and insubstantiality of awareness. That's it. So this is what arises. Awareness vividly arises, clear and empty, with no object of grasping. And it is sustained in the nature of self-liberation. So all of the appearances that arise, self-release, and in which it recognizes itself. So awareness, because it is not grasping to, because it sees the nature of the appearances, sees the nature of awareness itself. Almost in the reverse form of what we did first. In the first class, we looked at the nature of still awareness with no appearances. Now you can go the opposite direction, and as appearances arise, if you recognize the nature of the appearance, you recognize the nature of the awareness itself. So either way, you can bring it from the way of stillness or the direction of movement. You end up with the nature of the emptiness of phenomena and the nature of self or subject and object, the emptiness of each. And so back to Mahasiddha Maitripa, again, direct the mind to whatever thoughts arise, and without acceptance or rejection, you will recognize your own nature. So again, your relationship to the appearances that are appearing to the still awareness are going to lead you to recognizing the nature of the awareness that is apprehending the appearances. And then just one more very pithy set of instructions for how you go about implementing in your practice this simultaneous stillness and motion. This is Dujam Lingpa from the text Buddhahood Without Meditation. If you forcefully suppress the thought process while focusing your mind single-pointedly on such things as a stick or a pebble, then many obsessive thoughts will arise, as if you had blocked an irrigation canal, and your body, speech, and mind may become sharply uncomfortable. In that case, loosely relax and watch your thoughts from afar, clearly observing whatever arises. That which observes is called mindfulness. That which is observed is called movement. And resting in that state is called stillness. Identify them as such and meditate. So there you have it. Again, stillness of consciousness, the stillness of mindfulness, and then what it is observing is the movement of appearances, and then resting in that experience of still awareness, knowing movement without being set in motion by it, is stillness. So the quintessential instruction in all of this whole practice of bringing appearances into our shamatha practice is to rest in stillness without distraction and without identification. And so here the distraction, as you remember from this Dzogchen approach to movement, there are two different types, you could say, of appearances. You could say that there are objective appearances and subjective appearances. As you're resting in this stillness and just watching the movements of the mind. So the key, the pith instruction then, is don't be distracted by objective appearances. And so the objective appearances, a thought actually is an objective appearance. Like images that come up, memories come up. All of these things are as if they are appearing to awareness, you know, as objects to awareness. And so don't be distracted. Don't let your still awareness be distracted by these objective appearances that arise. And then, secondly, subjective appearances that arise, for instance, liking or disliking the objective appearance that is arising, or feeling a state of lethargy, for instance, would be a subjective experience as well, or a experience of laxity. Or craving, desire, all of these would be subjective appearances. And these are the way that basically it's almost like the color of a lens that is coloring the experience of an objective appearance. So the pith instruction here is don't identify with these. Don't say that I am this subjective state. And this is so tempting because it seems like these are happening behind the camera. And this is the me, this is the subject. These are qualities of the subject that are viewing these objective appearances. So don't fall into that trap of identifying with these subjective experiences. And then here, the very important quality of introspection that is so important for developing and as a partner for mindfulness. Here, introspection is not looking for movement of the object, but it's looking for a fusion of identity with the subjective appearances that I am, or it's looking for a distraction going in motion, the still awareness being set in motion, and going wandering and non-lucidly just going off in these meandering thoughts of rumination, our experience of daydreaming. So here, this is exactly what introspection is looking for. Is there distraction or is there identification? Rather than, is there movement of the appearance? And in mindfulness of breathing, for instance, when a thought arose, or a train of thought arose, our preference would be that we release the distracting appearance of thought so that we can return to the single-pointed tactile sensations of the movement of the breath. But here, in this practice, we don't release the thoughts, we simply let them be. And the key is that we let them be without preferring that they be different, without preferring, actually, that there was stillness over movement. And this can become our ingrained habit when we are practicing shamatha. We feel this great attachment to the absence of thought, to the stillness, to the tranquility. And so here we don't prefer stillness over movement. And now here, I think it's would be helpful to bring in an element of Mahamudra from, again, this is a point that Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche was emphasizing very emphatically last weekend in getting into the Mahamudra Shamatha. And so he said, basically, there is a section called General Points of the Mind. So this is just basically general advice about the mind when you're applying the particular advice that came in a later section for developing shamatha. So the general advice is don't prolong the past and don't anticipate the future. So what does that leave us with? If we aren't following the past or aren't anticipating the future, the awareness that is left is always going to be in the present moment. And so you can think of this present moment as our experience that is sandwiched between two things that don't exist. A past which doesn't exist, and a future which doesn't exist. The past no longer exists, and the future hasn't come into existence yet. All that there ever is in our experience is this present moment. And so I would like to, because this is so important in Mahamudra, and I think really beginning to think about stillness as the present moment of experience as is really going to be helpful for developing this simultaneous stillness and movement. I'd like to return to a citation from the very first class from Karma Chagme in Naked Awareness when he is describing the present moment. He says, this unstructured consciousness of the present, the instant that is free of mental engagement, is called Mahamudra. As it is unblemished by contaminations, even though it appears, it is untainted within the three times. So it is beyond the three times. This present moment is beyond past, present, and future. Everything is included in this instantaneous consciousness of the present. So this is called the embodiment of the Buddhas. And once you come to this conclusion, there can be no disputing it. This consciousness of the present is not created by anyone. So there is no inconsistency in saying it is spontaneously present. This consciousness of the present is the absolute space of phenomena, free of birth, cessation, and remaining, and it is present as the great Dharmakaya. All of that available right now in this very present moment of experience, fresh, uncontrived, unfabricated experience, non-conceptual. So when we are resting in the present without following the past or anticipating the future, let's just say one way of understanding that is exactly how we have been practicing it and how I have been describing this in the past, and that is that you don't follow memories. So memory comes up, don't become fused with that memory and go off wandering with the memory. And when fantasies of the future come up, don't go off wandering into the future, anticipating and fantasizing about this future. So this future that doesn't exist, this past that doesn't exist, when we go wandering, when our mental experience, when we're trying to rest in the present, and we are just viewing our mental experience, what we notice is that our mind goes wandering into memory or into the future very frequently. So that is one way of understanding that. Just don't do that. try to basically what recognize it. So it means don't go wandering. Recognize memories when they arise for what they are. You know, it's a mental experience in the present moment. And when fantasy arises of the future, recognize that for what it is. It's also a thought arising in the present moment. But Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche had a more subtle approach to this also. He said, don't follow the past means don't follow the immediately preceding moment of awareness. And don't anticipate the future means don't anticipate, or whatever other word you want to bring in there, the immediate moment that is to come. So don't be entranced with either of these things, these moments immediately preceding or immediately coming, but you just remain in this present moment, which is a brief, uncontrived, fresh, non-conceptual experience. And so this advice of his in regard to that was really, really helpful to me. He said, don't try to prolong the stillness, thinking that, I have to maintain this stillness into the future. Don't be obsessed with long periods of stillness. Don't think of the following the past as like memories from childhood. Don't think of the future as thoughts of retirement. Think of just, so it's not just that, but it is remain in this present moment and without being going to the previous instant or the next instant. So don't even think of stillness as lasting a long period of time. So this is really liberating. If you think, and I have certainly done this, and I probably taught you this way, and I, you know, I've heard teachings saying this, and I think this is true, and this is the experience that you end up at, is that you rest in the stillness of awareness, and you cultivate this stillness of awareness, and then motion arises within this stillness of awareness. Right? Sound familiar? As Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche, I think, is pointing out here, or this is the message that I got from it, there is a trap in thinking that you are experiencing the stillness of awareness in anything other than the present moment. How are you possibly going to experience the stillness of awareness as this big global spacious thing that I am resting in, unmoved, and that movement then is arising within in this unmoved stillness, you know, as transcending, you know, into the future and into the past. It was this stillness of awareness, and it is, I want the stillness of awareness to remain so that movement can arise within this stillness. So how are you ever going to experience stillness except as this moment-to-moment experience? And how will you ever experience movement except in this moment-to-moment experience as well? So does that mean that the stillness ends one moment and that the movement then crowds it out in the next moment? Or can you have, in the same present moment of experience, can you have a moment in the same can you be resting in this unfabricated, non-conceptual nature of mind as movement arises and is revealed, the luminosity as an expression of the luminosity of the emptiness that you are resting in, of that mind? And so Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche said, you rest in this, let's just call it simultaneous stillness and movement. But what you are really resting in is in the nature of mind. You rest in this nature of mind for brief periods. Don't get obsessed with, you know, my entire session is going to be resting in this stillness. And you just allow it to be in this brief moment. And then you do that repeatedly. You rest in this stillness of awareness, and then it will be, if there are appearances, they're going to be arising within that very same moment. So you are rest in this for a brief period, over and over again, repeatedly. Brief periods repeatedly, he said. And if you are obsessed or have a desire or are attached to stretching the stillness of this present moment, that becomes basically an oxymoron, I guess, or a non sequitur, or contradictory, or something. You want to stretch the present moment to include the future, still, so that I am still in the future, so all of these moving appearances will arise in my future stillness as well. You don't have to worry about it. Just rest repeatedly in these brief moments of stillness that knows movement. And then it just becomes, because it's easy, that then is not something that you have to create or fabricate or it seems unattainable or is unknowable or something that is not already part of your present experience. Because we all have these experiences of present absence of conceptuality for these brief periods of time, but we don't really recognize them as shamatha. So let this become your practice then, just over and over, recognize. So the point then becomes not to develop something that you haven't developed yet, but simply to recognize what is there in every present moment of experience. And then something else that Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche said that I think is very, again, was very helpful to me, and that I'm kind of extrapolating and putting into this, it's helpful in this situation, is that these focal supports, so you can think of actually the movement of the mind as actually one of these focal supports. So this is basically it just means that this is what you are occupying your mindfulness with so that your mind can come to stillness, so that it's not distracted. So what Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche called mere non-distraction. So it's not a big deal, but it's your mind just isn't going wandering. And that allows your awareness then to come to the naturally settled state of stillness in the present moment. And he says, so think back on the visual object that we have brought in for, and this is the very simplest or the very beginning of the shamatha progression in Mahamudra and for Padmasambhava in some texts as well, that you start with a stick or a stone or a pebble, and you're looking at, you know, a visual object. So this is the focal support, you know, a coarse object right there, and your goal is to allow this focal support to fill your visual consciousness, and notice an absence of conceptuality, because you're just engaged with this with a sense, one of the five senses, and these five senses are always non-conceptual in their engagement. So you're just simply resting in this experience of non-conceptuality. So Dzogchen Pon, so think about that now. You're resting with the focal support, mindfulness engaged with, it could be a pebble or it could be the tactile sensations of the breath. Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche says, don't let mindfulness squeeze the object. And I don't know. I knew exactly what he meant when he said that, you know. Squeezing the object, where you're really grasping to the object and you're trying to make, you're grasping to it so tightly that the mind just can't allow anything else in a sense. You're grasping onto it so tightly. So he actually, it's interesting, he was making this distinction all weekend between common or basic shamatha and Mahamudra shamatha. So he says in common shamatha, that's what you do, is your mindfulness just squeezes the object and your awareness comes to rest by, you know, hanging on to the object as, you know, its support. But he says in Mahamudra shamatha, the object of shamatha practice is actually this present moment of uncontrived, fresh experience, non-conceptual. So this is actually what your shamatha focus is on, this, and you just maintain a light engagement with the focal support, which is exactly, remember when we, in past settings where, for instance, we got to this point of what Lama Alan Wallace calls Dzogchen approach to mindfulness of breathing, and your primary awareness is of awareness of awareness, and you have a peripheral awareness of the rhythm of the breath. And then at that point, I would bring in this citation from, starts with an S. Anyway, great Dzogchen master, who says the Dzogchen masters always emphasize not to give too much attention to the breath, but that 50% of your object, or 50% of your awareness, knows the spaciousness and stillness of your awareness, 25% knows that it is still and spacious, and then only 25% basically knows that rhythm of the breath, or knows the breath. So this is, again, you know, it's you have this light, in that case, the breath is the focal support, but you have a light engagement with it, and what is really the object of your shamatha experience then is the stillness, the non-conceptuality, the fresh, uncontrived luminosity and clarity of the present moment. This is what you are resting in shamatha. And as your shamatha, the real object of shamatha in Mahamudra shamatha, Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche said, is that. So then you can think of the appearances that arise in the same present moment, not a subsequent present moment, but in the same present moment as this uncontrived, fresh stillness of awareness. You can think of that as like this focal support. Don't squeeze the thought. Don't squeeze the mental appearance. Just recognize it for what it is. Recognize its nature, as Mahasiddha Maitripa said. So you simply recognize it when it arises. And that's about all you have to do. And then as part of shamatha practice, and then you will be, this is a little different way, and I think a more subtle way, of having a simultaneous experience of stillness and motion in the same present moment of awareness. And then a real key to when these appearances arise in the same present moment as this clear, empty awareness. Next week, we'll go into examining the nature of that mind in movement. And that will be quite interesting with the particular set of questions. But for now, simply just recognize the movement of the mind. So you're recognizing that in a single moment of awareness, you're able to recognize the difference between the emptiness of the mind and the luminosity of the mind in a single moment, appearance as a manifestation of movement, and emptiness being this fresh, uncontrived stillness. So you're able to, recognize the difference between the stillness and movement. This is what Dujom Lingpa said is the first task. And then you have a simultaneous experience in this single present moment. And the key to doing that is when the appearance arises, that you have to have a stance of radical impartiality towards this appearance that arises. So Mahasiddha Maitripa said, whatever virtuous or non-virtuous thought, but whatever pleasant or unpleasant thought, whatever mental affliction that arises, whether it's a thought of hatred, whether it's a thought of craving, of lust, of whatever, whatever thought arises, just recognize it for what it is. It is only a mental appearance. And don't let that lead to a subsequent thought, which would be then a liking or disliking of that objective appearance. And then let that spin into, and this would be our standard approach, would be that that then just leads to a train of association of mental appearances that leads us into a non-lucid wandering. So simply recognize that the appearance is never the problem. And then recognize also that, as His Holiness said in the Dalai Lama, said in one of his Dzogchen commentaries, he said that the conceptual mind is not self-sustaining. And so this is really important. If you simply recognize these conceptual appearances as they arise, but you don't engage with them, meaning with the mental consciousness that you latch onto it and you become distracted by it or fused with it, and let that lead to a train of subsequent thoughts about that thought, that conceptuality can't sustain itself. It just self-liberates. And then one last thing before we do this meditation, because I'd like to give you as many possible ways of approaching this simultaneous stillness and motion, because it can be so slippery. What we are really trying to do with this simultaneous stillness and motion is to become lucid dreamers in the waking state. And so this is exactly what the Buddha said, you know, when someone, a tracker came to him and said, are you a god? Are you a Gandharva? Are you a wizard? What are you? And no, 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 no. What are you then? And are you human? No. Well, what are you then? I am awake. So this is what we are trying to do, is to become lucid in the waking state and see all of these appearances for what they are, that these are just mental appearances. They are movements of the mind arising to this clear, empty awareness. And so this one way that we can find this state, so I think that a very common experience for people when they're trying to have an experience of the simultaneous stillness and motion is that we oscillate between stillness and motion. So you have a present moment of stillness, and then movement arises, and then that becomes the next moment. So you oscillate between stillness and movement. You never have stillness and movement in the same present moment. And what we do is our minds go wandering. And what is the first thing that we often do, because you're well-trained with breath meditation, when you recognize that your mind has been wandering, you first of all release your grasp on the distracting object, rejoice, I am lucid again, this is it, return to your object, etc. But what's happened to the distracting object then? Phew, it's gone. And so this, I think, can be our attempt at simultaneous stillness and motion. We oscillate between awareness with no appearances, so awareness of awareness, and then the first appearance that arises shanghais us, and we go off wandering with it. Then, if we're lucky, introspection alerts us quickly that we have been wandering, and then we go, chase that appearance away so I can return to stillness. And so we go between stillness, either stillness or movement, and non-lucid movement, but we never have a simultaneous experience of the two. So this reminds me of the advice for how to develop lucid dreaming, right? Because what we are trying to do is to become lucid dreamers in the waking state. And Lama Allen said that the reason that Stephen LaBerge, the world expert on lucid dreaming, always invited him, a shamatha expert, to his workshops to teach, was that it was really, really important to maintain a balance when you discovered that you were lucid dreaming, either of two things is likely to happen. First of all, you get so excited, I'm lucid dreaming, finally, this is it, that you wake up. So you wake yourself out of the lucid state because you wake up out of the dream. Or the other thing that could happen is that you lose the balance and you go back into just a non-lucid dreaming. So either what you want to do then, the key of training for lucid dreaming is to maintain this shamatha balance of between excitation and laxity when you discover that you're lucid dreaming, and then let the dream continue, but now being fully aware that you're dreaming. So this then, I think, is another way that you can really begin to experience simultaneous stillness and motion. When your awareness has been shanghaied, your still awareness, and you go off wandering, don't become so excited and say, I'm lucid again, and chase the appearances away. But let the, just kind of rouse very gradually, a light touch, with a light touch of lucidity, and let the appearances arise or continue. So let the appearances that you become aware of that have been distracting you, remember the appearances are not the problem. The appearance, it's not that these appearances are distracting or distracted you, but that you were non-lucid, that's the problem. So simply add a light touch of lucidity to these appearances and then let the dream continue. And you can find this experience then of actually watching in a state of full lucidity, watching a train of appearances arise rather than just a single moment of them. And this is reminds me of some advice that Trangu Rinpoche, one of the greatest living Mahamudra masters, was asked about this in what became his commentary on pointing out the Dharmakaya. A student asked him, or commented, it's my experience that a lot of times while I am trying to observe appearances, that the act of observing actually causes the appearance to disappear, to dissolve, right? It's a really, really common experience. And so we call that the shy maiden experience or the cockroach experience. So when you bring your awareness onto an appearance, it disappears. The act of observing it sends it away. And Trungpa Rinpoche had a really interesting response to that. He said it is because of the conceptual way of viewing that you are bringing to the appearance that conceptual mind has displaced the previous moment of conceptual wandering. And so it has chased it away. And it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? And this is exactly what we do when we recover from our distractions as well. And that is perfectly appropriate when we are doing breath meditation, for instance. But if we are training to try to develop this simultaneous stillness and motion, don't, when the appearance, you recognize that you have been wandering, don't immediately displace those appearances with a conceptual mind that is viewing these appearances. You know, so you have to rest in this, what is it? It is that present moment of awareness that is non-conceptual, fresh, uncontrived, just letting these appearances go, but because they've got already a train of association, you may watch the train of association continue also. So rather than it being just moments of simultaneous stillness and motion, you might watch a longer period of simultaneous stillness and motion, again, moment to moment to moment, but that the appearances are linked in a sense. And that becomes then another way that you can do this simultaneous and get a feeling for that, this simultaneous stillness and motion. Okay, enough talking. Let's try to put that into practice by finding a comfortable position and doing this meditation of simultaneous stillness and motion. Begin by settling the body, speech, and mind in their natural states. You discover the natural state of the body in an absence of tension. It is not something you do, it is something you stop doing. So wherever you discover tension, constriction in the body, let your breath be drawn to it and release it on the exhalation. And continue to deepen your relaxation with each exhalation. As you maintain the clarity that you begin the meditation with. And then settle the speech in its natural state. Which is a state of effortless silence. And a relaxation in which you give up all control of the breath. And then settle the mind in its natural state. This is the fresh, immediate, uncontrived moment of awareness. Vividly clear, insubstantial, able to illuminate appearances without becoming them. This natural state of the mind can only be experienced in one present moment after another. The goal of this practice is to simply rest in that moment-to-moment experience of lucid, radiant luminosity and emptiness. And because the goal is not to suppress thought, these displays of the luminosity of the mind are bound to arise. This fresh, uncontrived mind, its luminous nature is to know appearances. How does it know appearances other than in this present moment? So simply rest in the stillness, your home, this fresh, luminous, insubstantial mind, awareness. With room in the same present moment, for a movement, a display of that luminosity. Within this single present moment, first of all, recognize the difference between the stillness of your awareness and the movement of this display of luminosity. The key to maintaining the stillness of your awareness is a radical impartiality where the content of the movement is irrelevant, whether it's a happy thought, a disturbing thought, just let it be and let it go. If you discover that your mind has gone wandering, don't chase the wandering dream away. Simply add a light touch of lucidity. That non-conceptual, fresh, moment-to-moment awareness. And the appearances that were never the problem in the first place may continue. Now in this lucid dreaming in the waking state. Give up all preoccupation with developing a long-term stillness. That's only an abstraction. Simply rest in the stillness of this present moment. And repeatedly, moment after moment, simply rest in the present. Let that stillness be your home. Fresh, unfabricated. Luminous. Non-conceptual. And in the same moment, movement may occur. Keep returning to that present moment of fresh, luminous stillness. Without grasping to it, without trying to stretch it into the future. And recognize movement in the moment it arises. Well, I hope that will give you some new tools or a different slant on your old tools for working with this really important fusion of stillness and motion and coming to an experiential experience of what that really means, so that you have a referent for what the words mean of this simultaneous stillness and motion. And so I know it's challenging at this time of night, and after I've been talking for an hour, to try to do that in a brief meditation. But I encourage you to work with those, basically the moment-to-moment nature of your experience over the week, so that it becomes familiar to you, so that you recognize it, recognize the difference between stillness and movement, and then you know what the movement of the mind actually is. Next week, probably have to get a little more precise with the language and say the mind in motion. And so really get familiar that, and first of all, the difference within a single moment of stillness and motion, the difference between these two, then having a simultaneous experience of them. And then next week, we will go into examining the nature of the mind in movement. And perhaps we might be able to, in this moment-to-moment perception, actually see that the mind that is the nature of the mind in stillness that we did last week and the nature of the mind in movement that we'll do next week, the nature of these two that seemed that we recognize the difference between, the nature of these two is no different. And then that will lead to a whole bounty of realizations called cutting through. So anyway, I hope you'll experiment with that and bring a playful attitude to this experience of the present moment over the course of the week. And then also I just wanted to mention that, this is basically, this is not an ideal situation to learn Dharma in, late at night, and then doing a brief meditation, and then, going home and trying to put it into practice and all of that in the midst of a busy life. So What Do You Think, Inc. Is going to try to, they're going to do their part, or Rick and Lindsay are going to do their part through What Are You Thinking, to provide nice conditions for us again to experience this in retreat. So we have a retreat scheduled beginning February 28th through March 2nd at Wonderwell, again, back in New Hampshire. And so you can advance notice, put that on your calendar so that you can black out that schedule, black out that on your calendar, and don't accept any other temptations for that time. Because I think all of you have experienced in retreat before that it's a much different experience when you are just really focused on practice all day from before breakfast until after dinner. And, depending on the length of the retreat and all of that, you might be able to make a lot more experience or a lot more progress in your meditation practice than you can in these, less than ideal conditions. So anyway, thank you very much for coming. It is an extraordinary thing that you have done by choosing to come here, a great merit that you have done by prioritizing this for your Wednesday night. And because of your motivation, your dedicated practice, May this great mass of merit that you have created not ripen as some temporary pleasure for you, but as an ultimate benefit for the greatest number of beings. Because of what you have done, because of your virtue, may all beings find a genuine path. May they find genuine guides. And may they travel that path because of your model and with other great models to its fruition, so that suffering is eliminated from the world and only becomes a legend of the past. By the goodness of what you have done, may it be so.